Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire's healthcare sector has almost 3,000 unfilled jobs, and it's not just doctors that are in short supply. Carissa Frost is a nursing recruiter for LRG Healthcare in the Lakes region. She spoke at a recent jobs fair.
I'm looking, obviously, for nurses, but I'm still looking for clinical positions, so licensed nursing assistants, medical assistants, LPNs, and we're actually here to recruit non-clinical positions, which would be housekeeping, dietary, linen, laundry, and basically I'm looking for everything.
Although the health field has the state's largest workforce challenge, leaders from occupations of all kinds say they're struggling too, and they're trying to get creative to attract new employees, develop existing workers, and even rethink how they deliver products and services. Today in The Exchange, our in-depth series on New Hampshire's workforce shortage continues. This hour, specific industries, how they're experiencing this issue and what they're doing about it. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests on the show today are Bob McLeod, CEO of Mid-State Health Center in Plymouth and Bristol. He joins us by phone. And Bob, great to have you. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me today.
Also with us, Sarah Colson, Director of Workforce Accelerator 2025. That's a program of the Business and Industry Association and the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. And Sarah, welcome back. Good to see you, too. Thank you.
Good to see you, too. Thank you for having me this morning.
And also with us, Rick Barron, Project Manager at Alteri Plumbing and Heating and Instructor in the Plumbing Apprentice Program at the New Hampshire School of Mechanical Trades. And Rick Barron, really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me, Laura.
Well, and Bob, I'm going to start with you because healthcare does have the biggest workforce shortage. Congratulations for that. 3,000 jobs unfilled in healthcare, Bob. What's inside those numbers?
Well, the number is daunting. What's inside those numbers are a number of factors that we're dealing with. One is that we're trying to compete with other regions of the state and other states in the New England region, so we have significant market demand. Compensation continues to be an issue that we deal with, particularly in the North Country. And the aging of our New Hampshire population, in particular with the providers we have, very well-trained seasoned providers now that are looking to slow down or completely retire. So it becomes daunting and it has a huge impact on the people we're trying to serve.
Who are you missing the most? What kind of jobs need filling the most, Bob?
Unfortunately, it's just about everything. We are always looking for physicians, nurse practitioners, even people that are supporting these providers, such as people at the front desk, medical assistants. All of these positions continue to see vacancies. In fact, our support positions oftentimes are running 20%+ vacancy rate.
Wow. So people waiting in line just to have that receptionist check them in for their appointment.
That's correct.
In what parts of the state, Bob, does the shortage feel the most severe?
Well, I feel it's really in the North Country. We have a lot to offer here in terms of lifestyle, but we also have the inability to compete with the southern sector of the state and also other areas in New England because of our inability to have adequate reimbursement and also adequate services that the provider or other healthcare professional may be looking for their family. So we're already behind the eight ball when we start, and I think it exacerbates it north of Concord.
Well, we heard this again and again and again yesterday on the air, people saying the pay rates are much higher in Massachusetts, and we heard from several people who said, I'm just going over the border, I'm putting up with the commute because the pay scales are so much higher there. Sarah Colson, just remind us first, please, what types of employers the Business and Industry Association represents and what you're hearing from your members about this.
Sure. So we represent employers from a wide variety of sectors. We really cover the entire state in terms of employment. So, you know, as I go out and I speak with employers about this issue, it's really it's a very common thing for everyone to be saying, yes, I'm in need of employees. I don't think that there's any specific industry out there that is not looking for employees right now. And of course, you know, I think to just kind of piggyback on what was just said, you know, North Country in particular is seeing this out-migration of young people. So I think that they're hurting a little bit more than other parts of the state. You know, Manchester is up and coming with all of the technology. There's a lot of, there are a lot of people actually coming up from Massachusetts as well as going over the border south. But we are seeing that, that the farther north in the state you get, the bigger the crunch, but it's across the board.
So manufacturers is what people often think of with the Business and Industry Association, but you represent other types of employers, Sarah?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So we have, we cover every single sector. So we have a lot of members who are in the technology field, healthcare, retail. We represent all of the chambers throughout the state. And so really we cover every type of sector out there.
Rick Barron, what are you seeing in your field and related fields?
So I see a couple of unique challenges in the construction industry. We have a distorted perception of the skilled trades, and I'm optimistic that that's changing from, you know, high school age up now. And we also have an educational precedence that's been set where the skilled trades, I don't believe, are given enough weight in high schools. And I'm optimistic that that's changing now with Generation Z. I think there was because of a generational gap in the construction industry, there's been a labor shortage. I think a lot of Gen Xers and a lot of millennials didn't catch the boat on the skilled trades, and the baby boomers were just really strong and kind of sustained the industry while Gen X and millennials were more interested in higher education as college became more accessible, online and everything like that. There became a shortage of those two generations, and I think that's changing, but it starts with changing perception, and it starts with changing the educational precedence that's been set and where not enough weight has been given to the skilled trades.
So what do you mean by that, Rick? Not enough weight? People disrespect it? People don't care about it?
Yeah, just from being a trade school instructor, I've been able to witness who's coming through in the apprenticeship programs, and there's a lot of work that has to be done in the trade schools themselves, and I think there needs to be more focus on math skills, construction math in high school. So when these people are getting out of high school, they're more prepared for an apprenticeship program. So simple construction math to be added in the high school programs would be very helpful in the skilled trades. Soft skills, you know, communication, just the ability to advocate for themselves, personal finance, those are the kind of things that I'm finding that the people that are coming through the apprenticeship programs lack.
Well, you're in plumbing, and but you also mentioned construction. I want to play a little piece of sound from someone that we talked to at a jobs fair earlier this year. This is Jeff Downing. He's president of CCI. That's Coniston Construction Incorporated. That's a company in the Lakes region. And he kind of echoes what you said, Rick. He's been in the business 27 years, and Jeff Downing told us he is looking for full-time employees.
The average age in our industry, in our company, which is 40 employees, is somewhere around 46 years old. So we have a lot of people that have been in the industry and been with the company 20 plus years, and they're getting ready to retire. And we don't see a lot of younger people coming into the trades right now. And I don't think it's just construction or carpentry. It's masonry, it's HVAC, it's electrical. And so we're out here trying to encourage people to construction. It's a good industry, and come check us out.
So that's Jeff Downing, president of CCI. That's a construction company. We spoke to him at a jobs fair. And I love what he says there, Rick. Come check us out. It sounds like from what you said a minute ago that younger people, maybe the 18, 19, 20-year-olds, are starting to come check out the trades.
They are, and it's really exciting. I've been to job fairs, and I've talked to high school kids who seem to be, you know, really have their act together, and I'm really excited about Generation Z, and I'm looking forward to kind of fueling the fire of the perception from negative to positive on the skilled trades. And we do that, we talk about it later, but, you know, social media and all kinds of stuff to get that out there, to get that perception shift.
What do you think, Sarah? Is there a perception about manufacturing? I know you guys represent a wide range of employers, but I've heard leaders in manufacturing say people also have the wrong idea about what those types of jobs are all about.
Absolutely. I think that there's still this lingering perception that manufacturing is this dirty job. But I will tell you that every single manufacturing firm that I've walked into has been very high tech. You know, there's coding going on. You know, I come from a math background, and I had to take one coding class in college, and I wasn't very good at it, truthfully. And so I look at all of these, you know, machines that, you know, we think about manufacturing as a low-tech job. It's really not. It's very high-tech now. And it's very clean. So you go in and it's, you know, many of these, the manufacturing companies are in clean rooms, and you're walking around and you wouldn't believe the amount of innovation that is happening in behind these walls.
So how do you break through that misperception?
I think that one great way to get rid of that perception is to get people in and looking at it. So I know Manufacturing Month, that comes up in the fall. We have a lot of tours that happen. There are school buses full of kids that are going to these manufacturing companies and going on tours. I think it's also important maybe to get parents in there. So if we're going to change perceptions, we really need to start with those who haven't had the opportunity to get in and see what it actually is about. Because, you know, all of us are looking at, you know, old movies and thinking about our grandparents' generation and what manufacturing looked like back then. And it really is a very, very different trade now.
The number for you to join us here in the Exchange as we continue our series on New Hampshire's labor shortage is 1-800-892-6477. Let's hear from you. How is your particular field experiencing this? Are you an employer with positions to fill, or are you seeking work but having a hard time, even in this economy? Again, our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can also watch our radio broadcast today on Facebook Live. And Bob McLeod, I'd love for you to follow up on something that Rick Barron said. He talked about the different generations. So, you know, we all know who the baby boomers are. Gen X, right? That's people in their 40s. And then the millennials are sort of young adults in their mid-20s, mid-30s. And then there's this upcoming generation that Rick calls Generation Z, which I've heard before as well. I think that's the 18, 19, 20-somethings. What are your perceptions, Bob, about the different generations and how they approach these jobs that you have to offer?
Well, they all have different needs, as we well know. So the baby boomer generation, and many of our physicians are in that category, they tend to accept longer hours, less days off, less vacation time, and they were just certainly trained that way through residency. As you get into these younger populations, they want some trade-offs. So they want lifestyle along with a good profession. And as such, we have to adapt to that so that we'll have flexible schedules for the younger population if they want it. And we'll do things to make them satisfied with their career at Mid-State, for example, by giving them abbreviated hours or extra time off. Whatever it takes to keep them on board is our most important goal.
You know, I remember, Bob, a couple years ago, we did a show specifically on the nursing shortage, and we were flooded with calls from older nurses who were kind of complaining. They were saying, you know, the younger nurses, they don't want to do weekends, they don't want to do overnights, they don't want to sort of put in that tough time that we had to put in. How do you close that gap, Bob? I mean, somebody's got to work overnight.
And I don't know how you really do it successfully. I think we accept the generations in the workforce as they are. What I'm most concerned about, though, is our baby boomers leave us. You know, we're going to have to continue to look at different strategies to meet what they expect, because the competition is out there Do you know that about a third of our physicians in this state are over 60 years old right now?
Wow.
So the challenge is here. It's not coming. It's here. So we're going to have to figure out what we can do with that. And it's the perfect storm, right? Because about a third of our population in 10 years in New Hampshire are going to be 65 plus. So how are we going to take care of these people and still engage our workforce?
Yeah, that's interesting. And I have heard people say healthcare in particular is in a perfect storm because you have a lot of people retiring, as you see in other fields. But then with an aging population, there's a natural increase in healthcare needs. So I hear you there. Rick, you wanted to jump in real quick.
Yeah, well, I'm a millennial, so, and I work a lot of hours. So I think that it's the focus. There are several millennials and Gen Xers that prefer the time off and everything. But I think it comes down to culture and purpose. I think millennials are more interested in a bigger reason for what they're doing, more so than the, you know, the compensation obviously is, you know, we need that to get be right and everything. But the culture and the purpose, I think, is a high driver of motivation for the millennial generation. And I think we've in the construction industry, you know, are involved in, associations and stuff like that, that kind of drive that purpose of developing, empowering, and we're using this labor shortage as kind of our purpose. And there's a lot of millennials on board and who work a lot of hours trying to change the trend and change the perception of the trades for the purpose of going after Generation Z, the high school kids. So.
Well, in fact, we got an email to that point from Fred about the trades and how it does have a, you feel good about working in this field. Fred says, I work in the water industry, both drinking water and wastewater. There's a tremendous graying of our industry. Fred says the vast majority of licensed operators in New Hampshire are over 50 years old. There are very few young professionals in the industry. Fred says, while not a glamorous or lucrative industry, he says it is critical for the health and economic well-being of New Hampshire. So I like what he says. It's not glamorous, but he's proud. He's making a difference in the life of people in our state. Let's go to our listeners, all of you. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Dan's calling from the Upper Valley. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Always glad to call in. So this particular topic really hits home with me. I'm a painting contractor in the Upper Valley. I have been for over 20 years. And I've really, over the last 5 to 7 years, have seen a time where you could go from having, you know, 11 men, 3 jobs going. So a lot of us are running skeleton crews of 3 guys or so that we've been lucky enough to hang on to. So, you know, as an industry, we're always talking about it around here. Small area, what do we do? And more so, what is the cause, right? So it all ends back, it all comes back to the opioids and drug usage in our small areas. I was listening to the program yesterday, and I did just a quick count of guys that I would normally employ this time of year that have just fallen completely off the map. And just from the little town of Canaan,
wow,
in a matter of 20 seconds, I counted 8 people. So if you think about the area we live in, 8 people, that's a strong workforce. And there's a lot of people taken away there. Now, to go to what some of the other callers just said, it's very important that we get our younger generation in. Absolutely. My son working with me, there's a program in Hartford, Vermont at the Technical Center, just an amazing program. And I think back in my generation, which is that workforce, work all the hours you can, 7 days a week, and it'll all work out in the end, right? Well, we were always told, you know, you don't want to, you know, you want to work to live, not live to work. And I think this younger generation realizes that. I don't want to work my life away.
When and you say those people to have fallen off, Dan, do you mean because of substance abuse? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Substance abuse.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because we, you know, the guys like myself who try to run a tight ship and give some credibility to the trades. I've been a painting contractor my entire adult life and most of my youth. And I've seen just this stigma that goes with it as far as, you know, we're all kind of boneheads. You all get out of the van and beer cans roll out. It's just not that way. It's such a different day. Just a different time now. And with the manufacturing as well, because when my son finished the program over there, he took tours of different
just like
manufacturing
Sarah said.
Facilities.
Yeah, Dan, I'm going to let you go, but after a break, we will definitely follow up on those points. We should talk about substance abuse. That came up yesterday, some pretty startling numbers on that. And we talked about the stigma earlier associated with certain professions, but we can touch on that again. Thank you so much for the call, Dan. We welcome your emails, questions, and comments. exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. Or you can give us a call like Dan did, 1-800-892-6477.
New Hampshire Public Radio listeners are curious, civically minded, and digitally savvy. As an NHPR underwriter, your business or organization can connect to this statewide and engaged audience through our many podcasts, our e-newsletter, or at our award-winning news site, nhpr.org. Learn more by visiting the business support page at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, The Exchange goes in-depth on New Hampshire's workforce shortage. And this hour, we're looking at specific economic sectors and how they're finding workers in this record-low unemployment environment. Let's hear from you. Are you an employer or a job seeker? What's been your experience? Tell us the story of your industry, whether it's healthcare, the trades, retail, manufacturing, teaching, or whatever field you might be in. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, just before the break, we got a really compelling call from Dan in the Upper Valley. And Dan, thank you again so much. And Sarah, he said something that came up on yesterday's show, the toll that substance abuse is having on New Hampshire's workforce.
Right. So there's, you know, again, across the board, I think that there are a lot of employers who are struggling with this right now. I have heard from some sectors that that are maybe in fields where safety is not as much of a concern, that they're starting to look over some of this to a certain extent, as opposed to just not having workers at all. But for the vast majority of employers, they're struggling with this. And I think that what happens is there's a trickle-down effect. So it's not just that the employees are maybe not showing up for work because they themselves have substance abuse issues that they're wrestling with, but it could be family members who are not able to show up because they're helping to support, or maybe there are children at home. So it does have this overwhelming effect on the workforce.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for the call. And here's an email from Lewis, who says his wife is a seasoned nurse, but a new nurse practitioner. Lewis says, we would love to move to New Hampshire, but she's having trouble finding a job in a field with so-called shortages. So that's for you, Bob. How would you connect Lewis's wife to some of the many opportunities that are out there?
Have Lewis's wife call me. That would be number one. And also, I think what Lewis's wife will face is that most of us are looking for those people who are seasoned nurse practitioners. So because in this state, nurse practitioners can practice independently. They don't have to be overseen by a physician, as the case in our practice is that they work as independent as our physician. So that might be one of the barriers Lewis's wife is facing. There are opportunities in New Hampshire. I think she just needs to maybe look a little further north than perhaps she has, but she should be able to find a job up here.
Well, and speaking of the healthcare field and the severe shortages that we talked about earlier, we spoke, as I mentioned earlier, with Carissa Frost. She's an RN recruiter for LRG Healthcare. We talked to her at a recent jobs fair, and Carissa talked about efforts to not just hire nurses from the outside, but to train and promote people from within the organization. Let's see what she had to say about that.
For entry-level positions at LRGH, we do have housekeeping, dietary aides, laundry, linen, but you can grow within our health system because we have an LNA Pathways program, which takes our current staff that could be a food service worker, wants to be an LNA. We'll put them literally in this building and do the LNA program, and then they would have a guaranteed job and a sign-on bonus with us. So yes, we do hire people that are entry level in a hospital. When people think about a hospital, it's just clinical, but literally hiring full gamut. But basically, there's ways to grow in every department. And you can't say that about a lot of places. So we have opportunities.
So again, Rob, LNA is licensed nursing assistant. How common do you think that setup is that Carissa describes, where you can start in housekeeping and end up a licensed nursing assistant?
In specific organizations in healthcare, like hospitals, or organizations that have a number of opportunities, that is those are great programs, but one health care organization is different than others. So, for example, in my organization, we're a federally qualified health center, which we do primary care practices as well as other services. So we're less likely to be able to grow our own, whereas I know a number of hospitals like Lakes Regions that are doing these programs, and they are bearing a lot of fruit. They're very important programs.
Sarah, what do you think? Training from within.
Mm-hmm. So there's actually the Job Training Fund, the New Hampshire Job Training Fund, is something that the BIA has been supporting and promoting since I came on board and perhaps before. And it's something that employers can tap into to help their incumbent workforce to increase their skill level. And this is something that it's a 50-50 match. There is currently, actually, I think, going to vote this morning, a new bill that is going to increase that amount because it is depleted most years. And so this is something that employers can be using to help upskill their workers. But that's something that I encourage most employers to look into. So whether it's through the New Hampshire Job Training Fund, through apprentice programs, using your current workforce to get them to the next level makes it easier to hire someone and onboard them. And so that is a very strong technique for filling those gaps.
Well, we got a note before the series even began last week. We got lots of input from our listeners. It's just been great. A lot of people have given us their comments and their experiences. We received a note from a listener, M, who says, companies seem to be unwilling to provide any on-the-job training. M says, by the way, I'm an engineer with graduate degrees looking for a position. M says, while job searching, I've observed that there are often several openings at the mid-career level and none at entry level. In other words, the qualifications for these positions is to already have experience in that job for several years. M says, it's obvious that if no one is hiring entry-level candidates and training them in the skills specific to that role, there's no pipeline of experienced engineers to fill these positions. So what about that, Sarah? He or she, I don't know if M is male or female.
Right.
Some frustration that there are these positions, but you have to have experience first. But how do you get the experience?
Right. No. And I think that is actually what I just was talking about, is that more employers need to be doing that. And so I think that if we can encourage the employers to be looking at different ways to hire, in the defense of the employers too, sometimes the pipeline just doesn't exist. Sometimes those people who are currently in the entry level positions are just not qualified or ready to move up to the next level, and that might be the underlying issue. But I think that long term, if we can be looking at the pipeline, starting with students coming out of middle school, high school, and continuing on, and we can touch upon that a little bit more later if you'd like, but even just to kind of get more people prepared so that they'll be ready for those entry level positions and then be ready to take the next step when the time comes.
Diane sent us an email. Diane says, one of the issues that I see is that high school guidance counselors recommend college to kids whose skills and gifts lie elsewhere, like the trades. Any thought about following that thread? Diane says, a great book that speaks to this is called Shop Class as Soul Craft by Matthew Crawford, that talks about the death of shop class and where we are with the trades right now. So lots about our education system and how it has affected the trades. And Diane, thank you so much for that email. And I'd love to throw that to you, Rick. What do you think?
I think that the apprentice programs are phenomenal. I think they gain something that a college degree doesn't provide you, because you are forced to have the on-the-job training while attending night school. This is post-high school. Generally, in high school, you can't go through a full apprenticeship program in plumbing or electrical or anything like that because you're not 18 and you need to be working under somebody full-time. But the apprenticeship program forces you to start at the bottom and climb to the top. So that's not a short-term solution for what businesses are looking for right this second. But like Sarah talked about, there is no pipeline. So you have to start these guys at the beginning, right out of high school, through the apprenticeship program. And I do think shop teachers play a huge role in high school these days. I think that they're probably undervalued at this point, and we have a shortage of teachers also. So shop teachers, if you want to teach trade school, there's a lot of work out there with that too, if you're passionate about it. But I think that the apprenticeship programs should be expanded to cover many other skilled trades. It covers my trade as a plumber, and it covers electricians, and it covers some HVAC, but carpenters, there's all 1,000 different trades in the construction industry that I think the apprenticeship program should be expanded to.
Well, and you're an incredibly busy guy because you're not only with Alteri Plumbing and Heating, but you're an instructor in this program, the Plumbing Apprentice Program at the New Hampshire School of Mechanical Trades, which before we met today, I didn't even know existed. So
and
there you are.
And my class went from 16 last year to 30 this year.
Okay.
So there's clear growth in the apprenticeship programs, which I'm very encouraged by. So, but again, the shortage just goes up the line. Now we're short on instructors and, you know, my class sizes are getting bigger. It's a good thing, but,
yeah.
You know, the pipeline, you know, we need all the way up.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned shortage of instructors because, Bob, I have heard that one reason that there aren't more nurses and nursing assistants and so forth in the healthcare field is not enough nursing education programs in the state. So kind of relating to what Rick said, what's going on there?
Well, it's a nice tie-in, and you're absolutely right. It's really a passion to teach nursing in these schools. These people are so underpaid for what they do that the potential for a nurse to earn more in the field, the actual provider field, is light years ahead of what people get compensated in the educational field. And something needs to be done about that because our nurses, as well as the other professions, they're aging rapidly, and the people, the supply that's coming in is far less than what we're going to need to treat our patients.
So why is that, Bob? Why are there? I mean, you said that the reason why is because nurses can make so much more working with patients than teaching others how to be nurses. But why is the pay so low for instructors?
Well, again, I think it is basically the wage structure that you would find in any learning institution, that they tend to pay less than the other industries do, and I believe that would be the same case for nursing, and particularly where the nurses that are being the instructors are people that achieved a PhD in nursing And so I think that they're stuck in a wage matrix that's specific to our education industry.
So who's responsible for boosting those wages so we can get the instructors that we need who can train the next generation of nurses?
Well, I think it's going to require more funding from the state to support, let's say, our university system and other educational entities. You know, our state provides less support than other states do for educational entities. You know, 50% of our students that graduate from high school go outside of the state to attend college. I think we need to do more to boost our university system funding and other entities as well.
Let's go back to our listeners again. The number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Today, it's day two of our workforce shortage series, and we're looking at how specific industries are experiencing this. We'd love to hear from you, your questions, comments, stories about how your sector of the economy has been feeling the workforce shortage. Again, our email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And in addition to listening today, you can watch our program on Facebook Live. And all of you, Patrick is calling in from Keene. Hi, Patrick. You're on the exchange.
Hi,
thanks for being
you?
With
Hi.
Us. Yeah, go ahead, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think this is a fascinating topic, and I think there's a number of things that we can do to address this issue, but primarily I'm looking at the high school and the career and tech ed programs that are available. We used to call them shop classes and voc ed, but right now there's a lot of things happening across the state in terms of career and technical education for the kids to get into healthcare, manufacturing, pre-engineering. And what I find is that there's a gap between the curriculum in the classroom and what the employers need in their workplaces. And if there's a way we could get employers more engaged in curriculum development, delivery of the courses, because these kids are getting opportunities to take what they learn in a classroom and then go into a work-based learning situation, whether it's a co-op or an internship or job shadowing. But there seems to be a gap between employer needs and curriculum being taught in the classroom, and I'd like to see how that could be addressed.
Thank you, Patrick, for the call. And Sarah, that's right up your alley.
Yes, it sure is. So the work that I've been doing with the Workforce Accelerator is looking at that issue directly. So what we've been trying to do, and it's morphed a little bit over time, but where we've landed is we know that there's a need for more business leaders to get involved with local school districts for that reason, for curriculum development, but also for, you know, opportunities for students such as internships, job shadows, mentorship. And so what we've arrived at right now is for the sustainability of this effort is to begin partnering with chambers of commerce throughout the state to help them to forge partnerships with the local within the local community and with local school districts so that there can be a team in place that can kind of help to guide these types of partnerships. And so right now I'm focusing on five different districts, but it's sort of morphing over time and expanding over time so that we'll be covering more of them. The ultimate goal is that via the chambers and specific industry partners that we can help to increase the number of partnerships and increase the number of businesses who are helping to influence. I will use Lebanon as a perfect example. They had a meeting in the Lebanon School District earlier this year where the conversation did arrive at that point of, well, you know, if we're building our science curriculum, for example, we should be bringing in industry partners to help us to create that design so that we know what the curriculum might look like with the influence of these business partners that can guide us towards, you know, what they need from their students when they graduate. And so that's exactly what I've been working on.
How do you, I know you want to jump in, Rick, too. How do you, Sarah, figure out when you are encouraging someone to consider a certain field, manufacturing or retail or whatever, and maybe pushing a young person in a direction where he or she maybe shouldn't be pushed? They're very young, middle school, high school. There's so much emphasis now on practical skills, STEM, and so forth. Maybe someone wants to be a philosophy professor.
Right. And I think that right now, it's not trying to push anyone into a particular line of work. It's more about exploration. So the earlier that students can start exploring careers, the more likely they are to find one that they like, but also to rule out those that they don't like. So the example that I like to use, and we all laugh about it because, you know, 50% of our middle school students want to be veterinarians when they grow up. But when they actually figure out what that entails, they're not always interested anymore. And so I think that, you know, for a student to be able to get that career exploration earlier at the middle school level is ideal, then they can get out there, they can say, well, you know what, this isn't for me. And then they haven't lost that time later on, you know, where they're going off to college and 2 years in, all of a sudden they've spent all this money and are now realizing, oh, this is not for me.
Sure. And you often hear young people say that about summer jobs. I had a summer job doing X and I know I do not want to do that.
Exactly.
So go ahead, Rick. I know you have thoughts there too.
So I think that we spoke about the curriculum. I think this is an opportunity where trade schools really have the chance to get it right, because most of the trade school instructors are like me. They're a project manager, or they're an estimator, or they're doing something where they're highly involved in the field already and on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I could be on a job site one day, or I'm in the office estimating jobs, but then I'm teaching at night where I have a curriculum, I have a book that's been approved by the state, and I'm in that book about 40% of the time, but 60% of the time I'm talking about real life. And I think a lot of trade schools take that same approach, and we have a chance to really get that right. If we could get people, there could be high school programs where there could be a similar option where you'd have, you know, somebody who's actually in full time in the work every day doing it, and being able to transfer that information, that knowledge to the students about what real life in the industry is. I think the trade schools have an opportunity to really get it right
there. All right. Well, thank you very much for that call. Coming up, I want to read a couple emails from people who work in social services. We were overwhelmed with notes from people who work in the field of helping people with disabilities and so forth, saying their workforce shortage has just reached a crisis level. So we'll talk about that. I got a couple notes from teachers as well, talking about shortages in their profession, and we'll take a lot more of your comments. So give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, the third in our workforce series, the untapped labor pool. Granite Staters, who are often overlooked by employers, are now getting a second look. So that's tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, we're talking with employers in specific fields about how they're managing the workforce shortage. And we'd like to hear from you. How is your particular industry feeling this? Whether it's the private sector or government or nonprofits, what strategies might help? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Joining us by phone is Bob McLeod, CEO of Mid-State Health Center in Plymouth and Bristol. With me in studio, Sarah Colson, Director of Workforce Accelerator 2025, a program of the Business and Industry Association and the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. Also with us, Rick Barron, Program Manager at Alterry Plumbing and Heating, instructor in the Plumbing Apprentice Program at the New Hampshire School of Mechanical Trades. And all of you, I did want to share just a couple notes that we got from Granite Staters who work in the field of social services. Rebecca says, "Beyond a crisis is a phrase we use daily here at Lakes Region Community Services. Every day we are forced to triage who will be picked up for services, who will be left at home. I spend sleepless nights wondering if this will be the week I have to curtail community participation services and redirect staff to our 24/7 community residences." Rebecca says, "I have employees working in the 65 to 85 hours per week range doing direct support." She says, "It is dangerous and reduces the quality of services, not due to lack of caring by our amazing DSPs, that means direct service providers, but due to exhaustion. I know the story repeats itself across all sectors in New Hampshire, but I am afraid real actionable changes are not going to take place until someone gets hurt. What are we waiting for, New Hampshire?" Rebecca says. And we also, I want to turn this to you, Bob, we also got notes from many, many people who work in the field of social services, talking about low pay, talking about incredibly high turnover, and talking about those weeks, 65 to 85 hours per week. Rebecca says it's, you know, only a matter of time before somebody makes a mistake. What do you think, Bob?
Rebecca is absolutely right. The social services industry has been impacted greatly by the workforce shortage. And a lot of it I have to attribute to a low reimbursement rate for Medicaid, which is a huge revenue stream in terms of depending on it for these type of services. Do you know, I mean, New Hampshire is 49% below the national average in reimbursement, where Vermont and Massachusetts are substantially higher than the national average for reimbursement. Mid-State, the last increase we saw was in 2012, and a lot of these social service organizations, it was longer than that for them. So you have that happening. You have a wonderful, rewarding career in social services to take care of these people. However, it's also a high burnout rate as well, and the people are paid less than what they could make, let's say, in an average wage anywhere, whether it be a grocery store or a fast food restaurant or whatever. I think the social service industry is in dire need for improvement in terms of compensation so that they can attract more people to take care of some of our most vulnerable population in the state.
So is that largely about Medicaid reimbursement, Bob?
I think it's a twofer. I think certainly Medicaid reimbursement or reimbursement in general is a big issue because there's so much competition in other areas to find jobs. I also think too that, you know, the inherent nature of trying to provide services, it's rewarding, but in the same token, it's very challenging. So I think it's a twofer in this particular situation.
Well, and I want to acknowledge again just heartfelt notes that we got from many people who work in this field. Michelle and Leanne. Deborah sent us a note also expressing some of the same concerns that Rebecca did. And she says what you just said, Bob, that that they're in competition at her social service agency with fast food establishments averaging about $12 an hour, despite what Deborah says, DSPs, direct service providers, having responsibilities that far outweigh those who flip burgers, stock shelves, ring up sales. Deborah also says, here's a potential partial solution, and I want to hear from everybody on this. She says, bring some of the legally vetted immigrants to New Hampshire. The federal government needs to provide more people to vet them so they can get legal status more quickly. She says there are empty buildings, such as the former community college in Stratham, that could be used to house and teach these people while they learn English, get a driver's license, learn the skills needed to fill some of the vacant positions. We also got an email earlier from Fergus, who also says that New Hampshire's workforce shortage could be eased by easing up restrictions on immigration. Sarah, this is very tricky political, but I want to ask you what you think, what people in your industry are saying about this.
Sure. So I'm not sure, you know, in terms of easing up restrictions, you know, I don't know if I want to speak to that directly, but I think I do want to speak to the fact that the immigrant population does have an immense, immense amount of talent that they bring with them.
And it's a younger population than a lot of native Granite Staters.
Right, absolutely. And I think that one of the barriers that I have identified, and a lot of us have spoken about at the state level in a lot of the groups that I'm part of, is the fact that we don't have a good process for identifying the skills, because if you think about the immigrant population, they might not arrive with a credential that can be easily vetted. And so what do we do? How can we take someone who's just arrived, who maybe was a doctor back home, and they arrive here, and because maybe there's a language barrier or because they don't have specific documentation, you know, they're stuck in a position where they're struggling to find work. There are entities in the state who have prior learning assessments. There are different organizations who help with the ESL training, the English as a second language training. And I think that we need to increase the number of programs that will help with those types of barriers and removing them for us so that we can really help that population.
Well, thank you to everyone again who sent those notes. We really appreciate it. Here's a note that came in from Jennifer in Marlborough. She says, I wanted to write in about one of the workforce challenges that I have personally witnessed, and that is the lack of family leave. Jennifer says, I have been teaching in the same district for 8 years. When I had my second baby, I'd hoped to take 12 weeks leave per the FMLA. That's the Family Medical Leave Act. Unfortunately, my husband also works for the same district, and under the FMLA, a spouse who works for the same company must split this time. Jennifer says, as an educator and one who continues to study early childhood, I found this to be highly hypocritical of our profession. I decided to resign from my position, knowing that if I did not, then I would have to return to school with a very young infant at home. Jennifer says, I love my students. I'm very committed to my calling as a teacher. However, I also know that the care and well-being of my family needs to come first. I understand that our country is devastatingly behind in caring for the American family, but I do believe that New Hampshire will lose highly qualified professionals if they do not put focus on New Hampshire families and what is best for children. Jennifer, thank you very much for that note. And Bob, I'm going to turn to you. How often do you hear people in your field, healthcare, dropping out because they have family needs that they just can't meet and work at the same time?
Well, it's huge. We have, as we're getting younger professionals in the organization, a number of them have family needs that are different than people that are, you know, certainly aging out. What we try to be is as flexible as possible, knowing the reality is obviously as they drop out either temporarily or permanently, it leaves a huge gap in our service lines. But again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier in the show, which is we're all going to have to be very flexible in meeting those needs because that's what our young workers want today, and we have to respond to that.
Well, and as we talked earlier about immigrants, tomorrow on our show, we're going to talk about untapped labor pools, groups of Granite Staters that employers might have one time overlooked but now are definitely getting a second look. So we'll tackle that tomorrow for sure. Eric's calling in from Laconia. Hi, Eric. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I've heard a lot from many of the industries, healthcare, hospitality, education, where there's workforce shortages. And I understand that wage rates for these in particular are definitely subject to scrutiny. There's a lot of talk about raising them. But I think a big point that's being missed is, you know, you could pay somebody $20 an hour, and if their rent's $1,000 a month, it's no different from somebody making $10 an hour and their rent being $500 a month. If we lowered the cost of living and provided more affordable housing and affordable living, the wage wouldn't be such a big issue.
You know, this is an issue that comes up again and again and again, the cost of housing. Sarah, you're nodding. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. No, I was just thinking, you know, as I'm listening to the callers, you know, there are a lot of barriers that are, in addition to the fact that we just don't have enough highly skilled individuals for these positions. You know, when we talk about family leave, well, it's childcare as well. So the cost of childcare, the housing shortage, transportation. So these are additional barriers that, you know, at the surface we're saying, yes, not enough workers, not enough skilled workers, but there are a lot of underlying reasons why we can't hire right now.
We got a note from someone who describes herself as a 40-year-old woman in the North Country who says, I have been turned down for half a dozen jobs in the trades, carpentry, plumbing, electricians, even offering to apprentice for free or minimum wage. Not one of them even considered it. This woman says, have any of your guests thought about recruiting women? What about that, Rick? Women in the trades such as yours?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That's a problem for you. Women, they're half of the labor force in the construction industry is weak. I'm involved with the Associated Builders and Contractors. I serve on the ABC Young Professional Group Steering Committee, and there are some women that are very passionate about construction on that committee, and so I've been really encouraged. I've worked with a million dudes and only a few women in this industry, and I really hope that changes. The perspective and value that women add, you know, is just unmatched. You can't fake it. So it's obvious to me that we need more women in our industry, and I'm the middle child of two very successful sisters, so I know that women can be game changers in the industry, and I encourage you to keep trying and find the right culture for the right company. Check out the bigger companies, I guess. Alteri Plumbing and Heating, you know, that's the company I work for, and we would love to have some women come in our office and looking for trades jobs.
Well, why do you think there are so few women?
I think there's a kind of a misconception back to that perception of, you know, everything used to be so, in my trade, I'm a plumber, pipe fitter, used to be so heavy and burdensome and physically abusive on the body. But new products and technology, safety procedures have taken a lot of stress off of the human body and your health and stuff. So, I mean, women can swing a hammer or, you know, use equipment just like men can. So,
well, and we spoke, as I mentioned earlier, with Jeff Downing, who works in construction. He's the president of Coniston Construction Incorporated. And we asked him about this as well, why there were so few women in construction. Jeff said some physical ability is needed to work for his company, but that is absolutely not the most important factor he's looking for in employees. Let's hear.
Physically, you, I think, have to lift 20 or 30 pounds or something along those lines at the most. But it's really about attitude and skill and, you know, wanting to learn a trade. And, yeah, it doesn't matter how physical you are.
Again, Jeff Downing kind of repeating some of the things that you said earlier. You are also an instructor as well as working in the field yourself, Rick. Do you see more young women in the classes that you teach?
This is my second full school year, and I've had one. And
really?
Boy, did it change the dynamic of the class, having one female in there. So she added a lot, and it's just something that happens when it's all men. If you put women in the room, all of a sudden the conversation gets smarter. I don't know how that happens, but it really is true. So I really enjoy having women in construction in every facet, down from the field up through the office.
Well, and on the flip side, Bob, a lot of people in healthcare, especially nurses and in the positions below, are women. So do you, in your field, have an effort to look to men to fulfill some of these jobs? I remember my dad was in the hospital a bunch of years ago, and, you know, the nurses and the licensed nursing assistants and the other faculty, the other people who come through, and there was one man and probably a dozen women. So what about that? Kind of the reverse in your field, Bob.
Well, there's some sort of irony in this whole thing, isn't it? It's the same thing that we see in construction, only in reverse, where we're predominantly a female industry. I see that trending the other way a little bit anyways, as there are some great opportunities for people to go into the nursing program, and I think we're starting to see more males in there. And again, I say predominantly female in many of the disciplines in healthcare, but let's keep in mind that it's still pretty much a 50-50 in for physicians. There may be very well an uptick where the female physician is getting maybe a little bit higher than the male physician at this point. But it's a cultural thing, as Rick mentioned. There are a lot of things that we have to do to promote the other gender getting into our industries.
That's one of those, again, untapped workforces that we're going to talk about more tomorrow, although, again, the flip side for your different industries. Sarah, I want to ask you about a trend that I have heard about and see if some of the companies that you work are doing it, and that's helping people with student debt. What are you hearing about that?
Oh, sure. There are a few companies who are starting to tackle that issue. You know, Fidelity comes to mind, but there's a push to get more companies to offer some sort of benefits in terms of student debt as a retention tool as well. And so recognizing that we do have a lot of employees, students, who leave after college and go elsewhere because they can get better pay just south of the border. If employers here can offer that as a benefit to kind of help retain our students, that is a retention tool. And it's very, very helpful. I mean, now when we look at, you know, the types of benefits that younger employees are looking for, that's what they want because the debt load is enormous. I mean, it's really like having a mortgage. And so they'd like to have that as a benefit, maybe even above, as opposed to having a retirement account right now. So getting creative about it.
And we talked earlier about the benefits, the way that younger workers really, you know, they want a work-life balance. And you spoke eloquently about that, Rick. I wonder how much you could consider part-time work in your field. I know in the healthcare field, you know, a lot of nurses work part-time or flexible hours. But what about in your field, Rick? Is part-time work even really a possibility, a way to expand available talent?
It's tough because the state requires a certain amount of on-the-job training, so they would be using their time not efficiently because the time that they spend should be getting allocated to their on-the-job training towards their license in the plumbing industry. So if they're working part-time, I mean, it could take them 10 years to get their plumbing license. You need 8,000 hours to be a master or a journeyman plumber. So that would stunt their growth in the industry part-time. It is an option, however.
What about manufacturing, Sarah?
Manufacturing is getting more creative about different types of hiring hours too. You know, every business is a little bit different, but there are manufacturers who are looking into that, especially with the aging workforce.
All right. Well, we could have talked for 3 more hours. Lots more we could have covered. Thank you all very much for being here. Bob McLeod, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Bob McLeod, CEO of Mid-State Health Center. Sarah, nice to see you. Thank you.
Nice to see you too. Thank you.
Sarah Colson, Director of the Workforce Accelerator 2025. And Rick Barron, really nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Rick Barron, Project Manager at Alteri Plumbing and Heating and an instructor at the New Hampshire School of Mechanical Trades. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.